Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, and it is now or never. As a matter of fact, I need to say it, as I look east, as I scour the news articles from sea to shining sea, I do not see our government from the state and the federal level relinquishing the unconstitutional powers and the tyranny that they're reigning over us. Now, I want to be clear. We're starting to permeate and penetrate into some of the dark red states. This is why we need your help. We are penetrating into the red states. Now, we have some movements in blue states, but I'm telling you that I understand that the barriers and firewalls that are within these blue states are going to make it hard. We don't have the time to win this war at the blue state level. We have to start it off in the darker red states, because the people in those darker red states, they're absolutely fit to be tied. They are so frustrated with the way their government is failing them. I mean, they're starting to actually listen, realizing how they are the problem. Now, there's no need for me to call names or, you know, to be judgmental like that. But we're all a part of the problem, and some of us are less of a part of the problem than others. And the more you start accepting that government is limited and defined, and the more you accept that government shouldn't be doing these things, then you start getting yourself into that space of going, yes, I'm less of the problem. Because I'm sure that those people that I've been working with for years and years, and those people I've been just beginning to work with, they may feel like, oh, well, shoot, you know, I'm never going to get there. Actually, that's not true. There are people that finally get there. It's great when you finally get to a point where you can argue with me. And, you know, not argue in a way of, you know, proving you're right or me proving I'm right. Because once you get to this point where you see things differently, then it helps us. Because bottom line, I don't have a perfect vision. I have a better vision than most, than most who teach the Constitution. But I don't have a perfect vision. And every time I, you know, think that, you know, I've got a good handle on this, somebody comes along, Douglas V. Gibbs will point something out, and I go, you know what, you've made a good point. And so it helps me obtain a better vision. Now, I don't want to spend a lot of time in a long monologue, but what I do want to do is I want to make sure you do not forget that this show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. Now, 9 times out of 10, I, you know, get a little bit of a, you know, a little feedback on, hey, I love the way you tied that in. Because I actually do try to tie in this Republic Review into Reclaiming the Republic in ways where you don't see it coming. And so, anywho, we're on the third article, or the First Amendment still. And one of the things that we were just covering was a few things of the Bill of Rights that don't apply to the state governments. Believe it or not, these things are not protections against privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. So what are these things that aren't privileges and immunities for a U.S. citizen right here in the Bill of Rights? I'm going to read it again. And there are two things in here that have nothing to do with your privileges and immunities or anything that you can be protected from. So Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. So, okay, in the last episode, we just covered this. So we know that that is one. So what is the other one? Or prohibiting the exercise of, prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So in other words, your privilege or immunity to exercise, you know, the your religious expressions, for you to actually exercise your religious beliefs. Or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition government for a redress of grievances. So, you know, it's not the last one because, you know, I keep on telling you that's an inalienable right. This right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition government for a redress of grievances. So what is it? So the other parts that I didn't, that we covered, prohibiting the free exercise. Okay, we covered that. You do have a right for your religious expression and worshiping the way you want to. What about the freedom of speech? Do you have a right to say whatever you want? Well, actually, when we think about it, that is a privilege and immunity that is protected. However, we have in a civil society created legitimate restrictions on what you can say and where you can say it. Now, in the middle of the street or in the middle of the woods or what have you, you can say fire. But you can't say fire in a theater. Why is that? Well, because it becomes a public safety issue. You don't want people to just all of a sudden start, you know, panicking and running. So what, you know, the responsible person, what do? You not say anything? Well, no, but let's say, you know, there's a fire over here. You know, what you can do is you can get up and say, over here on this side of the room or in the front over here, there's a fire. So everybody move and go in the opposite direction so that you can help people, you know, calmly evacuate so that they can get out. Because if they don't know where the fire's at, they could be running into it. But what you have to do is you have to maintain some level of order and asking the people to be calm. I mean, 9 times out of 10, they go into panic mode anyway. I've seen some really good episodes that do that in a comedy way. But anywho, the question is that something that the government can actually do? Can they, for public safety purposes, make it illegal for you to speak or to use that word? It's the same thing as saying bomb at either the airport or on a airplane. Can they start specifying what you can't say in certain environments? Well, I would say that they can, because it's all, if you look at enlightenment and if you look at the inalienable rights, it's not like they're trying to create a level of tyranny. They're trying to protect the overall health of everybody by ensuring that, you know, these situations don't arise where panic can actually cause, you know, a lot of damage or the loss of life. So anyway, I know that there's some people that just, you know, freedom, freedom, we gotta be free. Civil society requires discipline. Civil society requires a cognitive person to be engaged in a civil discourse, and just yelling and screaming and causing panic and fear is never good. This is why I truly believe that we need to have a higher standard for public servants. And so, as a matter of fact, I've been talking about this, but I've never done a good job in remembering that we need to do a petition on public services, or public servants, I should say, and what they say, that they cannot use fear or those types of things. I mean, There's never a point in time where it is okay for a public servant to get up and say, because of global warming, we're gonna die tomorrow. No. And as a matter of fact, for them to be able to utilize their power in usurping authority that they don't possess and saying, we've got to address this because it's an... No. There, it is, global warming is not a national emergency. It may be something we need to have a conversation on. The environment may be something we need to have a conversation on, but that doesn't mean that they could just quickly usurp that authority. No, no, no. We're not going to die tomorrow. We've got time to give us an amendment to determine whether we're willing to give you that power or not. That's what has to be done. And so when anybody gets up and says, we got to do these things, whether that be Clinton and Gore or the rest of these folks, Obama, Biden, even Trump creating this space, you know, defense, he didn't need to do that. The department, or I should say, the Department of the Navy, the Department of Space, that should have just become a mission or a clarification of the mission of the Department of Defense, period. That's it. As a matter of fact, I don't like the fact that we have an Air Force and an Army that is continually operating. There is no need for the Army to be operating and existing. Folks, they have to be. The reason for an Army is for the point of prosecuting a war, not for using, you know, forces as a deterrent in Japan, Germany, and so forth, because over half a century ago, we fought a war over there. Are you kidding me? Anyway, so we'll be back and we'll come up with what that second, well, let me just go into the break here. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as I was saying, there are two things in the First Amendment that are not attached to privileges and or immunities. These are restrictions, declaratory statements that the federal government cannot regulate and or establish religion. And the other part, my friends, if you haven't already figured it out, it's the press. So the press is not an individual privilege or an immunity that if they started regulating the press, they would be abridging your privileges or your immunities. Do you have a privilege to read the paper? Yeah. Does it have to be unregulated? No. It can be regulated. And you have the ability as government, as the people that, you know, direct government in your community and in your state, you have the power and authority to actually reel in this thing called the press. Now, what we want to do and what needs to be done, and we covered this at the beginning of the year, or actually in the springtime, when we were covering those comprehensive issues and matters to campaign on for basically the Bill of Rights for the 21st century or the Bill of Rights for 2022. What we need to do is we need to have your state define what the press is. I believe that the press needs to be redefined and or further defined that there are two facets of the press, that the platform itself is not the press. It is the projection. It is the medium of reporting, for the reporting to occur. In other words, Facebook is the medium. Twitter is the medium. The New York Times is the medium. It is the platform. It is the business that is in business to basically give you that information. We need to have our state legislators clarify that the press, the reporters part of the press, that would be you. You have a right to report on anything you find worthy, whether it is whether it's fallacious or not. You have a right to be able to print that. And when they shut down information, it's one thing for them to come along and say, you know, not with fact checkers, but actually articulating how this information has been contradicted by very specific facts. We need to make sure that when a platform is doing that type of censorship, that they need to be labeled as a censored platform. Now, if in your state basically says if a person posts on their own page, and they have a page that posts these types of things, that are reporting, you know, anti-COVID stuff, it doesn't matter, whatever it is, even fallacious stuff. I mean, shoot, you can find on Facebook the Darwin Awards. They've got a Darwin's Awards for 2022 that, you know, actually has videos of people in accidents where they die. I mean, you're talking about graphic, you know, really bad videos of people meeting their own demise by either their own or by an accident of chance or what have you. And so, why is it that though that type of stuff is not being censored, but ideological stuff such as religion, such as party and politics, that means that they are a they are a political activist organization and a religious activist organization that is trying to inflict. And in other words, they're going beyond the definition of a platform to where they're becoming a propaganda mill. Now, whenever they do those types of things, then they need to be fined and they need to be labeled as a propaganda mill. Because it's one thing, because you don't get hit with everything in your news feed on Twitter or anything else. As a matter of fact, I know most people, you know, like myself, I was completely unaware of the fact that Twitter was just filled with all sorts of pornography. And so I go, wow, I had no idea. But there are absolutely open, you know, I'll just say environments, because it's not like they're pages. There's these people that openly associate with each other over these really perverse things. And I'm going, hold on here. Twitter allows that to happen, but they don't allow other people to associate and share information that is absolutely tangible and or important, such as the stealing of the elections and those types of things. Are you kidding me? So, in other words, they want to be the gatekeepers of very specific stuff. And when they do that, they are causing harm because they are a platform. And in America, if they redefine you as the press, you, the reporter, that the reporter shall be free to post and they shall, you know, they can't block your post or censor you. If we go down that path, then these states will actually start being able to sue these activist platforms like Twitter, Facebook, and so forth. This is how we actually restore our freedom of speech and freedom of what we call, what we have to redefine as the press, because I'm telling you, Facebook is not the press. Google is not the press. The New York Times is not the press. These are mediums where they're trying to manipulate and manage the narrative. And so states can actually regulate the medium. They can regulate these platforms where if a platform is suspending or taking away and or not posting, such as New York Times, they refuse to post anything that's positive towards the Second Amendment and why, you know, having and constitutional carrying is far better for, you know, for civility and for our society than gun control. And if they're not posting anything or printing anything to that effect, then they're suppressing information. And bottom line, they become a propaganda mill. And bottom line, that means that they need to be fined and they need to be labeled as a propaganda mill. That your government will basically, the state of New York, will tell people, we don't trust the New York Times because they're trying to manipulate the narrative and they're suppressing information, period. And so you read it at your own risk. And that's how you start changing paradigms, because I'm going to tell you, there's going to be the ideologues out there that are going to want to read the New York Times because it echoes. They want to live in that echo chamber that actually supports their evil thoughts on society and how you have to be compelled and controlled, where when we look at the majority of the people, because there are people that will, you know, support the New York Times being able to be a propaganda mill. But when mom and pa, when grandma and grandpa finally realize, wow, the government is stepping up and saying, hey, these guys are bad, then they're actually going to start, you know, believing this, you know, there is way too much manipulation by the mainstream media. But states have to start doing this. And I tell you what, if states start doing this, everybody, this will help wake people up. Isn't it beautiful that we have such great solutions within this Constitution? We've only been indoctrinated to see it one way. And I'm telling you, the way we see it, very dangerous for our society. Very, very dangerous. So with that, let me continue on into the Second Amendment, right? Because that's what the next one is. So the fourth article, and this is kind of interesting because it starts off with what? No, it's not the right to bear arms. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. There you go. And this one amendment is one of those individual rights, privileges, and immunities that we all have, because why? Who is a part of the militia? The citizenry of the state. The citizenry from this age, from this age to this age. And as a matter of fact, no state can actually say only men, because the federal government allows women to actually serve. And so the federal government, as we read in the Constitution, has this role, responsibility, power to standardize what that service in the militia is to be. So when they started allowing women, so this is where, okay, you don't like women and you don't like the representatives that just voted for women to be in, you know, combat duty and that they have to be a part of the militia in, you know, in all aspects of combat and so forth. Okay. Then you vote out these bums that allowed that to happen, and you fix that so that women aren't compelled to be a part of the militia. Women aren't compelled to be a part of combat and those types of things in the military. That you know, it's one thing that they volunteer and they can do that they won't be constrained from being able to do those things, but they can't be compelled. And you vote these people out by actually having a nationwide movement to say, we're going to fix this. This is wrong. We're not going to allow this to happen. This is where using the high ground and using the Constitution to say they had no authority to create that standard, or actually they did have the authority, but what they have done is counterintuitive, and there's reasons why they shouldn't have done that. And so bottom line, those are the few issues that we can actually stand up against Congress and say, you're gone. Because you did this, you're gone. Anyway, the Third Amendment will be read, and we'll talk about this when we come back from this break, these two promos. So folks, hang in there. We'll be right back with the Third Amendment. And this is kind of interesting because this is actually one where you can be compelled by government, but we'll be right back after these two messages. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so I do have a go back regarding the Second Amendment, because the Second Amendment, even though it points out this little thing called this right to be infringed, it cannot be infringed, the right to bear arms. The fact of the matter is, what the Second Amendment really is telling you is you have a duty and an obligation to bear arms and to serve in the militia, period. It's almost like a compulsion, because our national security is based on everybody. Now, there is this thing called a conscientious objector. And so, bottom line, I truly believe that we need to get to a point at the state level, the county level, where we identify those who are conscientious objectors and those who are not. Because I do not believe it is appropriate, nor is it just, nor is it right for people who are conscientious objectors to be able to vote for and to be able to participate in what government says we do and what we don't do. Does that make sense? In other words, if you want to be a conscientious objector and you don't like government, you know, allowing people to bear arms, you don't like government to give freedom, you know, or actually, hold on here. Let's say we don't like government to be able to do, you know, protecting your religious rights and these other things, that you want government to start enforcing things that are unconstitutional. Well, see, that's why we don't want the, we can't allow these people to actually serve in government. So, in other words, if you can't support the Constitution and you're not willing to do the ultimate sacrifice, then why is it that we would allow you to become a public servant? Does that make sense? To me, it makes a lot of sense to say these people who conscientiously object to the Constitution, they object to being a part of the militia, they won't own guns, and they won't do what is necessary for the security of a free state. They're not willing to defend their security, then why would we allow them to be involved in public service? Does that make sense? So one of the things I put into my book a long, long time ago is we have the ability to actually start managing a very complex layer of what we call a citizenry. I believe that there are people that are legitimate conscientious objectors, and if so, then they should not be able to either be a public servant or vote on very specific things. They should be able to vote on their own representation, but they should not be able to vote on things that would be involved in, like, the amendment of, you know, restricting guns at the state, or things that would be, I mean, the fact that they even try to do those types of laws is unconstitutional. But I believe that we have the ability to, you know, print out a voting card for that individual based on how they've decided to be a participant in our society. Are they really just a citizen inhabitant, or are they a full-fledged patriotic citizen? If they're a full-fledged patriotic citizen, willing to have guns and those types of things, now any citizen that is just a, what we call, an inhabitant that is voting and so forth, that doesn't mean that you lose your citizenship. You just, because you're not willing to do everything else, you're not going to be able to run for public office, and you won't be able to do some of these other things or vote in certain things. However, there's no reason why you can't change and actually become a participant. But the whole thing here is we have to start holding everybody accountable to supporting the Constitution. And so if you're not going to be a, if you're going to be a citizen, but you can't support the, what this means, folks, is being a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state. If you're not willing to support that, then you should be reduced to a citizen inhabitant, but you're still a citizen. There is no reason why a inhabitant, it becomes a citizen unless they go through the full process. If you're a born citizen within the United States, but you choose not to support the Constitution, then there are certain things that you need to lose privileges to because you're not willing to support the Constitution. It is antithetical to allow citizens who will not support the Constitution maintain their, you know, their status as a citizen, a full status as citizen. We have to start looking at lowering the degrees of citizenship, because it's not about trying to purge the ranks, but it's about saying, you know what? If you're not willing to do this, then you should not be able to participate in the, because bottom line, you have to fully support the Constitution to be a public servant. You can't be a public servant and a conscientious objector to the Constitution. Sorry. That's where our problems lie. And so we have to understand that there may be people that need to be transitioned, you know, or I should say moved down to and transitioned back into full citizenship, but they need to start understanding why and what and how important these things are for them to be a citizen. So in the next article, which is the Third Amendment of the Bill of Rights, no soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. In other words, they can, in time of war, prescribed by law, compel you to quarter a soldier on or the military, the militia, on your property. Now, the reason why this is here and this is important is because the framers, realistically, they just fought a war on their own soil that America might actually have to fight again to defend its liberty on its own soil. And therefore, they needed to be the ability to actually deploy militia and forces throughout the United States to basically say, okay, people in this area, if you have barns, if you have outbuildings, if you have this or that, then you need to be able to quarter these the military. Now, what they're talking about is, you know, in those days, they absolutely needed, because they didn't have, you know, what they call, you know, pup tents. They didn't have, you know, shelter halves, or, you know, because in the Marine Corps, you had a shelter half. You had half of a tent, and your battle buddy had the other half, so that you didn't have to carry a whole tent, and everybody didn't have to carry their own tent, because the tents that they made in those days, or I should say Vietnam, or even possibly, you know, the Korean War, they started realizing that they could lighten the soldier's load or the Marine's load by, you know, putting, making the tent a half a tent, and then, you know, having the two, you know, carry their own stuff that they needed to, you know, reduce some of their own weight, so that they didn't have, you know, a two-person tent. Everybody didn't carry a two-person tent. And so, and having a one-person tent was even, you know, just as heavy almost. So it was the way they kind of integrated and innovated to reduce the load on the given, you know, service member. So the point is that back in those days, they didn't have the ability for these men to be sheltered from the environment, from the, you know, bitter cold or what have you. They needed to be inside. And so, because they didn't have any other means. Nowadays, they actually have other means. They have the ability, they carry, you know, carry everything on their back. So my point is that the quartering would be on your property, not in your home. And as a matter of fact, this needs to be a petitioned to clarify this, you know, this whole concept of being able, for them to be able to put you out of your house or put you out of your building and structure, when technically the Army today and the Marine Corps today, all the services today, they deploy everything that they need to be able to function and operate. So because they do that, because we've been well equipped and organized, there is no reason today for them to actually have the authority to quarter in your home. It should be changed and or modified. So this actually requires an amendment to take away the ability for them to actually quarter within your home or within your dwellings, and basically require that they can, you know, quarter in your property, on your, in your yards or what have you. Now, there may be some caveats to this, because if they needed to quarter within the cities, because, you know, that's where the battle was, where people didn't have yards, they were literally downtown fighting, then, you know, it's just like war is heck, right? So it becomes one of those things to say, do we really need to? I don't think so. I think that at that point in time, they would have to commandeer buildings. They would have to commandeer, you know, and business buildings, not homes, not private. Now, let's be clear. Businesses are not private. They never have been and they never will be. We've allowed them to redefine them as private people, but they're not. They are registered organizations that, you know, have basically pleaded to the state for their license to be able to operate in that state. The state is the one that grants their existence, and they are subjugated to the state, where a human being is born as a sovereign citizen and is not born to have to be licensed or what have you. Not even Social Security is something that subjugates a person. So anyway, we'll be right back in closing on this one amendment.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as I was saying, the Constitution, the paradigm, things have changed dramatically since then. We've advanced in our warfare practices, and so forth. And so this is one part of the Constitution where they actually can compel you, but it needs to be tailored to where they can't put you out of your home. And no U.S. citizen government should not be able to put you out of your home for tax purposes, nor even for warfare purposes anymore. Not at all. This really does need to change. Now, you can be compelled for them to be able to use your property, and damages or what have you will be addressed after the conflict and after the war and so forth. But bottom line, if we're defending our liberty here at home against foreign warfare or even against a civil uprising, then we have to be able to support. We're required to support the Constitution and constitutional operations that fall within the purview and power and authority of our governments, whether that be your state or federal governments. It's the law. It's the supreme law of the land. And they needed these types of powers to be able to do what they need to do. But they don't need powers to do all the things that they want to do that they've been doing. I think that makes sense. Anyway, the next amendment, which is what the Fourth Amendment is about, your security, or I should say your rights of what they call privacy. Now, this is the one amendment that was used by black men to say a woman had a right to go into a Planned Parenthood building and had the right to invoke privacy over her health care. However, they went way too far, because you do have a right in your persons. You have an inalienable right in your persons, but you do not have a right to kill a human being. And the problem is that they tried to do everything they could over the past 60 plus years in redefining what a human being is and what his life is. And it's really funny that they protect the eggs of a bald eagle and many other what we call protected species. They've got laws that say you damage an egg, you go to jail and you pay $250,000 if you kill that egg. Hold on, it's just a fetus, right? What's the difference? They know there's a difference, and they've been giving you doublespeak for years, and they understand this. And the ends justify the means, because it is about killing babies. It is about being able to do very perverse things. So anyway, the Fourth Amendment says this, that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall be issued upon probable cause, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. And so technically, this Roe v. Wade thing, first off, they didn't have a jurisdiction. The federal government didn't have jurisdiction. They were claiming that this was a privacy issue. No, this was a civil issue over murder. Did a person, can you go out, do you have a right to privacy when you're in the commission of a crime? Sorry. Do you have a right to be able to expect that, you know, government can't come after you as long as you can commit a crime in secret and you don't know that you've killed somebody, because that person isn't on their records. That person hasn't been born yet. What? This is why states actually passed anti-abortion laws, because they wanted to make sure that the life within that woman was protected. And then they had qualifications for it in cases of rape, incest, or the, you know, the health of the mother, what have you. And so this is where it goes down to the states. But what ended up happening was the federal government, who had no jurisdiction on this at all, stepped in and said, we're going to say that a woman does have this right. This was an unconstitutional overreach by the federal court system, by getting involved in something they had no jurisdiction on, and then they basically pushed a progressive agenda down the throats of the people and saying, now you can have, the woman has a right to kill her own baby. And we're actually at a point today, see, they weren't even using that language in the 70s. You know, a woman had a right to choose whether she couldn't have that or not, but they didn't even go down that path to say kill your baby and so forth. But nowadays, these late term abortions, and the fact that they've actually had witnesses and videos of abortion doctors actually killing the child as it's been taken out of the womb, I mean, these things are just so graphic and so deplorable that I'm going, oh my gosh. But it isn't just about abortion. This particular amendment is actually a protection against the state. And so when I say the state, that doesn't mean just the government offices. That means the government authorized entities. What are government authorized entities? It's simple, folks. I've been telling you this. Your businesses and corporations are government authorized entities. And this is how the government, wink, wink, nod, nod, actually gets these corporations to do the dirty work for them, because they understand that they're actually being denied to be able to do these things. They can't spy on you, so they get corporations to. Amazon was doing this in the 90s. Yeah, if you've been doing business with Amazon, you've been spied on all of this time. So, folks, you have a right to be secure in your persons. They didn't have computers back then, but that whatever you put, it's just like having your own little wallet or having your own little safe. And just because you connect your safe to everything else on the internet, you have a right to be secure in that. And anybody, whether it be government or a hacker, it doesn't matter, or a business that is gathering stuff like cookies and so forth, you know, Once you understand this one amendment, it shuts down businesses. You know, it's an advantage for business to be able to spy and try to target marketing so they can make a little money, but they don't have a right to do it. And your right of privacy supersedes their desires and wishes to improve their bottom line. It is that simple, folks. Your inalienable rights, and this is an inalienable right. Now, there are people that utilize this for evil purposes or what have you. That's something between them and God, their creator, that they need to basically be accountable for. But when they start committing crimes and those types of things, that's another issue. But we don't have, the government cannot and does not have the authority because of this amendment to spy, to even intervene and to receive your communications that are private and personal between you and another person. It's the same thing as if they're collecting this information, your communications between you and another person, that's the same thing as a wiretap. Where are the warrants for each of those specific communications? Because it says right here, on oath or affirmation, in other words, they can't just issue a warrant, but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons and things to be seized. Well, oh, your emails, we're going to seize your... No, there has to be something very specific in that email for them to seize it, or they have to basically walk away from it. And so there's no way they can actually get a judge to legitimately sign off that you're going to send an email that's going to be, you know, harmful. Out of the 20 emails you send, one of them is going to contain something bad that they have a right for probable cause. You just remember, their jurisdiction doesn't run over all these different crimes, like drugs. They don't have any jurisdiction over drugs. The state should, and the state should be doing these types of things. But to have the federal government do this and allow Big Brother to exist, I'm sorry, folks. I'm sorry. Our liberties and our privacy is far better than the direction we are going into actually losing all of our liberties, because that is the ultimate cost and that's the ultimate price that they're expecting you and I and all of us to pay. We have to surrender our liberties and our inalienable rights for this new order to be able to do what they believe is best. Now, the fifth Amendment, and most everybody understands this, and I got 30 seconds. I have the right to, you know, not incriminate myself, basically, if you've seen and heard those types of things. But the article, this seventh article, the Fifth Amendment, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury. Now, this is one part of the Fifth Amendment that is violated all the time today, folks. Many times you get arrested and are brought in for a criminal crime without an indictment by a grand jury. Where was the indictment, you know, for them to actually be able to come and arrest you? So we'll get into this in more of all the details in our next episode. G.R. Mobley, I am G.R. Mobley, and we're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.